When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone!
Hello, welcome to the 3-0 Show. I'm Britt Giroli, here with Eno Saris. We are missing, as always, Derek Van Riper. Finish up a little bit of his paternity leave. It is Thursday. We have two Thursdays left of regular season baseball as we record this. You know, we are definitely getting down to the wire. September 21st, the regular season, the lights at the end of the tunnel. We're going to get into who's hot. We're, of course, going to dissect really the two races left, the National League wild card, the American League West title, which is constantly flipping hands. We're going to talk about who's hot, who's not. Does September matter? I feel like a Dr. Seuss rhyme. And then we're also going to get into rookies that you might not have heard of because the game gets younger and younger. There are so many young guys coming up. Not everyone's going to get the Corbin Carroll, Gunnar Henderson treatment. That there's still so many good guys to watch. You can probably pick one or two out from virtually every team. Some teams, certainly more than that. But honestly, you know, if you could field an under 25 team, I mean, you're talking about some of the best guys in baseball right now, which is nuts. We're going to get into the Braves. Ronald Acuña chasing down really special history. As we are recording this, he remains on the precipice of 40-70. He has 39 home runs, 67 steals. He will definitely join that 40-40 club with the next home run. I'll be in D.C. tonight. Hopefully he does it. If not, Patrick Corbin is pitching tomorrow. That seems like a pretty good
Seems like a good matchup.
I didn't say it. Someone in Atlanta did, but they are not wrong. You know, let's start with September because we're in it right now. We've got, 10 games to go, more or less, 11 days to go, more or less, in this regular season. Mm-hmm. So much is still yet to be decided. We've seen some slides. We've seen some teams get hot. All right, the Padres, a little too late, but the Blue Jays, winners of 5 straight. The Braves, sliding now, losers 5 of 6. How much, in your opinion, does September matter?
You know, I'm tempted to say not at all. There it has been some research that links September records to and regular season records to postseason winning percentage. And if you look at something like regular season win percentage to postseason win percentage, it's about 3 times stronger than September. And that makes sense. I mean, you're talking about a bigger sample. You're talking about how good was the team over the course of the season versus over the course of 30 days. But if you look at something like September win percentage to postseason series wins, zero correlation. So I'm tempted to say there's nothing here at all. The only thing that makes me worry a little bit for the Braves is there have been a lot of games in division. And I'm not sure, you know, if, you know, this captures that sort of saying there's zero correlation captures everything. Consider the fact that the Braves have been playing the Phillies a lot. And that seems relevant because the Braves are going to play the Phillies again in the postseason, most likely, you know. And so if that happens, you know, there's a similar thing going on with the Brewers and Cubs. You know, if the postseason started today, the Brewers and Cubs would finish in Milwaukee the regular season, and then the Cubs would just stay there and play the next wild card series against the Brewers in Milwaukee. I believe that's how it lines up right now. So you can't say that there's no meaning at all to the fact that the Phillies seem to be matching up well against the Braves. And so that is the only thing I'm at all worried about. I would still say that the Braves look like the presumptive World Series favorite out of the National League. I wouldn't take that away from them just because of a little small cold streak. You know, another thing that happens in September that makes things all messed up is like, you know, you keep Charlie Morton out of one series in order to pitch him in the next series. Or let's say you rest Charlie Morton and you don't get as many Charlie Morton stats as you normally do because you want him ready for the postseason, right? Think about the last week, this last week we're about to do. Think about how many TBDs there are in the schedule in terms of pitchers, right? There's just going to be, oh, we're going to give him an extra day of rest. Clayton Kershaw, we're going to skip him once, you know? And so that leads to losses maybe in September, but it's all about setting up for the postseason. So not completely not worried, but mostly not worried.
I agree with everything you're saying. I'm going to push back a little though, because in the history of the World Series and just in the playoffs in general, it's not always the best team that wins. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree on that. Yeah. It's the hottest team that wins. So I'm not worried about the Braves right now, but as they get into a four-game series here with the Nationals and then they go home, I'm worried if they play like crap for the rest of the time. It's okay to have a bad series, a bad two series. We saw that with the Orioles recently as well. But then they go and they win 2 of 3 in Houston. They came within a run of sweeping in Houston. Mm-hmm. I think for the Braves, you have to have a bounce back series here, right? You have to still be playing good baseball, even though you're really not playing for much. Though, honestly, they're still playing for home field advantage, mm-hmm. which I would argue is a huge deal. Do you want to go? You want to go to LA more than you have to with 50,000 people? No, you don't. Do you want to go to Baltimore if you make it to the World Series? And you know, you don't. You want the home field advantage.
Yeah.
So they do have things to play for still, and they have individual accomplishments. Matt Olson, just a tear with the home run record right now. Acuna, as we mentioned, one homer shy of reaching that 40-40 club, could be 40-70.
Bold predicted here that he would get 100 combined. By yours truly,
you did.
Finally got one right.
You did. But, take your victory lap. Spencer Strider, if he wins on Sunday in the start against DC, he could be a 20-game winner. He's sitting at 18 right now with two starts to go. So there is a difference between resting guys and being flat-footed, I think, in the postseason, right?
I see. Okay, I'll take what you're saying, but the way I would respond is saying that there are different ways to be hot. And I would say that one of the ways to be hot is to be healthy, right? Or to be not. And so you might, like, I'll give you that maybe the Dodgers aren't as hot as they were early in the season, because when you look at their rotation for the postseason series, it's going to be Bobby Miller and let's hope Clayton Kershaw is throwing 90, and you know, and then we're just going to put Pepio and Lynn together and see what happens. So that to me would be not hot going into the postseason. Whereas when I look at the Braves, I'm like, well, Max Fried came back. Charlie Morton's pitching, you know, is pitching healthy. So like, I would say that rotation lines up pretty well. They haven't lost anybody in their lineup. So I don't know that, like, you know, being hot hits wise or singles wise or stuff like that matters as much as being a good team because everyone's healthy.
Yeah, that makes sense. But certainly when it comes to the wild card race, I think being hot could be the difference between being the wild card and sitting home, mm-hmm. right? Padres, as we tape this, winners in 7 straight, they're all done. It's too little, too late. Had this happened in August, we'd be sitting here saying, maybe the Padres are in,
yeah.
right? Here they go. But you look at Toronto, as I mentioned in the intro, winners of 5 in a row, kind of thrust themselves back into this AL wild card race in a really meaningful way. They beat the Yankees last night. Good start by Kevin Gausman. I watched a little bit of that game. Terrible strike zone on both sides. But I think momentum for a team that is fringy can really catapult you, especially right now, this time of the year, right? I've heard teams explain this before, and it holds true when you think of some of the wild card teams who have had deep runs. If you are scratching and clawing and every game feels like a World Series game the last week or two of the season, then you get in. Now you're playing in a best of 3 wild card. Every game is the World Series, right? So you keep that mentality and you keep grinding and grinding. There is something to be said for that and that mentality, I think, especially for a team that isn't guaranteed to make it.
Yeah, I also think of something that Billy Beane once said, which is that if you just by staying in it and keeping your team intact and not selling, that there's something that happens after the deadline where the bad teams get worse. And so there's more wins on the table after the deadline. And that's not exactly what happened in the AL East. But the Yankees are, you know, have jettisoned their veterans. have, you know, put a bunch of guys on the IL and are not fundamentally a different team than they were pre-deadline in terms of now they're playing all their rookies and trying to see what they've got. The Red Sox, to some extent, doing the same thing with Rafaela out there. It's exciting. I like those young players. But, you know, the interdivision games that the Blue Jays are playing may not all be as difficult as we would have thought going into the last month. And so what I think what you're seeing in a weird way is that the AL West is tighter because the A's in a weird way have gotten better. They're playing more of their young guys. They're not playing as many of their veterans. And in that case, it's good because their veterans are pretty bad. And so what you've got with the A's is they're getting better. And the A's, the American League West is so strong and is going to be so tight down the pike that I think the Blue Jays have vaulted themselves into almost a definite spot. And now we're talking about, the AL West as 2 out of 3, are going to make it in. And that's how I kind of see it right now is like, I'm in my mind, the Blue Jays are in and the Astros, Rangers and Mariners, they're fighting for the division and the loser of the division gets, the wild card. And one of those teams is not in. And it's kind of sad because the Astros, strong team as always, the Rangers, the rabbit of the season, and the Mariners, the turtle of the season, I guess they're the hottest lately. It's kind of sad to me that one of those teams won't make the postseason, but you've got to have that. Otherwise you just have bad teams in the playoffs. So, you know, I'm glad that there is a race there, and I think it's mostly in the AL West.
Totally. I mean, as we sit here, Tampa Bay commanding lead in the wild card. They're up 8.5. They're making the playoffs. Yeah. They're just still fighting for the AL East. I don't think they lost Wednesday night to Anaheim. It's going to take a hell of a run by Tampa Bay and also a lot of luck because the Orioles are up 2.5 games.
I think they really needed to sweep Baltimore in that series.
Yeah, the Orioles also hold the tiebreaker, which would have been an important thing.
And the Orioles, Orioles' last 10 games are easier. So.
Yes. Yes. So that to me means it's probably going to be Tampa Bay for that first wild card. As you said, Toronto winners 5 in a row. They're one game up right now, 85-67 as we record this. Seattle 84-68. Texas 84-68. Houston 85-68. It is absolutely going to be a fascinating race because it's an easier path as a division winner. It's a much easier path. You don't have to deal with that wild card round. As we said, you can rest guys. You know, it becomes a little bit more strategical and how you set things up versus the wild card. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I think two of those teams are going to get in. Barring a collapse here, I think Toronto's playing with a lot of confidence. I think I agree with you. I think they're probably going to get in as well. If I had to pick a team that was going to get in, I'm going to say Seattle because I picked them as my World Series team. So let's keep them alive a little bit longer. But how devastating would it be if Texas misses the playoffs after all of this?
Yeah, it's going to be rough. One thing that is in Texas's favor is that they're getting healthy. We just talked about how that's related to being hot. So Josh Jung had his first homer post IL stint. Evan Carter is playing really well in that outfield as a replacement for Adolis Garcia, and Garcia's back now. So that's a really formidable lineup. But as good as their lineup is, their bullpen is bad. And their starting pitching is decent, but their bullpen is pretty bad, and it's cost them. I think they've converted something like 4 out of 16 saves, their last 16 saves, and Will Smith is imploding, and Aroldis Chapman has no command. So it's a tough time there, and I could see that happening. But that one's so tight. In the National League, I feel like it's almost a two-team race at this point. The Giants, everyone's writing their epitaphs, and the Marlins, maybe it's a three-for-one race here. The Marlins, the Cubs, and the Reds all have 79 wins. Next up is the Giants at 76. I think that's it for them mostly. So Cubs, Reds, Marlins. One of them makes it. Who you got?
This is really tough for me. I think, listen, if the Cubs don't make it, their season's going to be defined by a collapse because they looked like a near lock, right? Yeah, they looked like a near lock for a little while. It looked like they were just going to come away with the division. And then the Brewers really pulled ahead. Right now, I think they're kind of on the outs. I'm going to go with the Reds and the Marlins. the Marlins have been intriguing, right? They have played – what really has been disappointing, though, with the Marlins is this past series, they haven't been able to really get it together. So I'm going to go with the Marlins. I think they're a good story. I think what Skip Schumacher has done there has helped to change the culture. Their pitching has always been there, that young pitching we've all salivated over. Just been waiting on the offense. And if you notice, Jazz Chisholm has got going here. He seems to be kind of a real igniter, not just personality and star power-wise, but when he's doing well, they're doing well for the most part. And they've gotten some good offensive contributions. They did a nice job upgrading the lineup a little bit at the trade deadline. Jake Berger has been good for them, a really good add. So I'm going to go with them. I don't feel great about any of these teams. I think whoever makes it will probably get pummeled in that first NLDS, whoever emerges out of there. There's just such a big divide, I think, between the division winners in the NL and this wild card race. The Reds would be a great story. Joey Votto might be his last year, right? Might be his last homestand. So that tugs at the heartstrings there a little bit. And the Giants have kind of been dead in the water. And I know you wanted to elaborate because people have said that they're boring, right? Yeah. And we've talked about this podcast before, how I struggle to know most of that roster because they are boring. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, would Giants fans be upset? Because it seems like they made the playoffs a couple years ago out of nowhere. They were this fun, fun, lovable team. And since then, we haven't really seen anything. So what is going on there? Like, who is to blame for this roster and kind of just their just like lackluster kind of year?
Yeah, I think there will be blame to go around. And in fact, maybe missing the playoffs will be good because it'll spur some change. That's a possibility. I thought Grant Brisby's article on it was really great. Grant talked about how if you just go back 3 or 4 years, when they hired Farhan Zaidi, you'd say, well, they're entering a rebuild phase. In the next 3 or 4 years, we hope to get up to 500 and have a bunch of rookies. And if you look at that now, you say, well, they've been at 500 the last couple of years and the rookies are starting to get here. So you'd say Farhan did his job. I think one of the things that messes it up is they had that 107 win season. Kind of made people think that this team could be better than it was. And so I when I look at the things that make them boring, and I attend games, I have kids who are watching these games, and I talk to fans a fair amount about the San Francisco Giants season. I would say that the things that make them boring are mostly just things that they're trying to do to win every game. I think it's triage. It's like, this is what we've been dealt. They wanted Judge. They wanted Correa. They wanted, top free agents. They were second for Bryce Harper, you know? So, you know, this team would have stars on it if those stars had signed with them. Since they haven't, the Giants have said, okay, well, we're going to spend our payroll in this way. We're going to get all the second level guys. We're going to get all these useful bit pieces and put them together in a way that might be boring, but we're trying to win games here. That's what we're trying to do. So I guess that would be the pushback I have on that. But in terms of the race, maybe losing for them will be good, spur some change. But I don't think it should be change at the top because I think Farhan has done a lot of good for this team. When it comes to the Cubs, the Reds, and the Marlins, the Cubs have the hardest schedule. The Reds have the easiest schedule rest of way by win percentage. However, the Reds have the most losses of the three. I did say they were tied at 79 wins, but the Reds have the most losses, so they actually are a little bit behind. And so I'm going to actually take the Cubs based on this fact. They've been, when you look at the underlying features, the best team so far. They have a positive run differential by 90 runs. The rest of the guys we talked about, the Marlins and the Reds, are minus 45, minus 50 in terms of runs scored and runs against. So I think fundamentally the Cubs are a better team. They did run into some trouble against the D-backs, but I'm going to take the Cubs as taking that final spot in the NL.
Super interesting. I want to do a brief interlude here because maybe an hour before we started recording, the Detroit Tigers have made a move adding to their front office under President Scott Harris. They've been thinking about adding a GM for a while. They went outside the sport, Jeff Greenberg. He was previously the associate GM of the Chicago Blackhawks, but he was in baseball prior to that. He was with the Cubs, which is where him and Scott Harris worked together. Mm-hmm. He was director of pro scouting, director of baseball operations, and assistant GM with the Cubs. So a little bit of a Cubs reunion there and somebody who will kind of facilitate what Harris's message is, and certainly work closely with AJ Hinch, the manager who I feel like is a good hybrid breed. You know, he's a guy who understands the analytics side and, you know, has close relationships, certainly with Scott Harris. And, you know, I'm assuming going to eventually have one with Greenberg as well. So a little bit of news on that front. But, you know, I want to get into something that somebody brought up to me yesterday, which is we talked about the Red Sox and Yankees. They're bad. They're fighting it out for the basement. They've both been eliminated. Is it good for baseball that this Rays, Orioles, Blue Jays are the three at the top of the division because these are smaller market teams with smaller fan bases? Or is it better when the Yankees and Red Sox are good, you know, globally, probably for money, TV revenue wise, but what is better for the game in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question because you're what is better for the game means, you know, what is good for the game. You have to define what is good for the game. And, you know, if you ask Manfred, it's money. I mean, that's his job. It's like, you know, make the owners more money. That's Manfred's job. And so I think Manfred, if you got him in an honest moment, would tell you that he'd rather the big markets make it, because that will mean more ratings in the postseason. And that would be more money through advertisers. I do think that there's other ways to consider good for the game. One way to consider good for the game is growing the game. Maybe taking those smaller fan bases and making them larger, you know, that could also be good financially for this, for the league long term, because you see that some of these smaller markets do struggle in terms of making money, if we are to believe some of these A's numbers that came out, or just generally in terms of filling stadiums. That's something we know. We've seen, you know, Baltimore's finally filling the stadium, right? But there was a lag where, you know, even though they were good at the beginning of the season, they weren't quite filling it. So, and we've seen, you know, we've seen issues in Tampa and other places with regards to attendance. So I would say that there is definitely something good about new blood in the postseason, and bringing attention from parts of the country that aren't always paying attention. So I'd say it's probably half and half. I think if you ask Manfred, it's an easy no. But if you ask the sort of average fan, it might be a yes. I mean, just think about all the personalities on this Orioles team that are now sort of nationally relevant, and just think about how fun they've been as a team with the whole, you know, the water hose thing, and they just seem like a fun team of personalities. That seems like something that baseball can commodify on some level, you know, right? Like I can't think that, like, oh God, Baltimore in the World Series, that's terrible. I don't think you can just reduce it down to that.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. They had their rookie dress up before this Houston series, and they posted on their social media, all the rookies dressed up as Mr. Splash with like floaties on their arms and inner tubes, and guys wrote on the back like their number and Mr. Splash. So they're really fun.
And you see the celebration. They actually used the beer bong the way it's supposed to be used. And I think Hyde actually did the beer bong. So that's pretty intense.
Mike Elias did. Yeah. John Angelos did.
Really?
It was like a wild time. Wow. Yeah, it was a wild time. And that was just clinching a playoff spot. Now, if they win the AL East, it could be even crazier, right?
Next?
I don't know. I have to let you know.
Full on frat party.
If we gave Rob Manfred, like you said, a lie detector test or truth serum, that's what Mets manager Buck Showalter was always like. There should be liar, liar day where everyone has to have truth serum and you have to tell the truth. We were always like, yeah, sure. It's you guys that are lying to us, right? Like, go ahead. If we were to give Manfred this truth serum, I'm curious, would he think it's a good or bad thing that teams that tried to win, the Padres, the Mets, that spent a lot of money, are not making it to the playoffs as well? Is that something that is good for baseball or not good for baseball?
I bet he would love it. I bet he thinks it's good. So good. One of the things that ownership management has tried to do is limit spending. If you look at the history of the draft slotting, limit spending, international slotting, limit spending, the luxury tax, limit spending. Well, all of this has been done to limit spending. And you take the two teams that threw caution to the wind, quote unquote, and just really spent the most, and they didn't make it. I think it's great. It's like a cautionary tale to the rest of the owners. Don't go outside of the box. Don't go into that third luxury tax thing, you know, like, and so it gives more teeth to the processes, the rules they've put in place to keep people from spending. So I think he's probably on some happy that they didn't, if you got the truth out of him.
But it's really unfortunate, in my opinion, because you want the ownership group. You want the Peter Seidlers, right? You want the ownership groups that are going all in. You want 30 Steve Cohens but or John Middletons,
you here
right?
Is
like
you.
You want those groups.
You here is you. Yes. You here is the fan. It's not necessarily Manfred, I don't think. Don't you think?
No,
don't
I agree
you think
with you.
That like the other owners are like, oh man, Cohen's really making us look bad. Oh man, Seidler's just out here spending, man. That just makes us look bad. So, you know, if the U is a fan, I think the Padres and Mets not doing well is bad news. But if the U is an owner, then it's good news.
Here's my question, though. If money doesn't equal being competitive, why is there competitive balance tax? Why are these owners paying these smaller market teams money?
Yeah.
Right?
It's
money doesn't equate success. If I'm a big market owner, I'm like, why am I paying you? Like, if we want to spend this much, we're going to spend this much. The whole key was like parity, right? But we've achieved parity. Now, MLB and Rob Manfred would argue, well, maybe we've achieved it through the money they were given. Maybe, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't think there's a paradox there. You've uncovered some sort of untruths that are being told probably in there. But I also think that the way you define parity is important, because if you look at teams making the playoffs, yes, small market teams make the playoffs. But if you look at people who've won the World Series, I believe there hasn't been a World Series winner in the last 10 years that was lower half in payroll. And you kind of think of like the A's and the Rays and a lot of these small market teams as teams that have figured out how to win in the regular season, but have not won at all. And you kind of wonder if there's a link there. I mean, to me, if you have a ton of money, one of the things you can buy is depth. And it didn't work out for the Mets, but one thing what I liked about what they did was they brought together all these players in a way where they had an extra player every day, you know, an extra actual real player. And that's great, because if Starling Marte goes down, then you have this extra outfielder that can play. Tommy Pham, you know, Tommy Pham is not going to go to, you know, a small market team at that point of his career, but the Mets can afford to give him that deal so that they have just an extra outfielder lying around. And so depth is really important, I think, in the playoffs, because we just talked about luck and hot and health. And so if you get to the postseason and Starling Marte goes down in the World Series and you can replace him by Tommy Pham, you're in a better position than the Rays, you know, if they lose somebody.
That was my pushback for you. The Rays have better depth than anyone else.
I know, it's true. They have all these young guys.
They ruined your argument.
Yeah, I know they did.
They lost 3/5 of their rotation. They lost their superstar.
Yeah.
They've had Tyler Glasnow on the IL for periods of time.
Like, it's true. But if you look like the Reds, the Reds have had to turn to like Stuart Fairchild a lot, and they had to claim Hunter Renfroe, and like they didn't have some of that depth built in, and they're a team that has had a lot of young players come up. So I still believe that money buys you depth, and that ends up mattering in the postseason and at different times.
That's fair. But Tampa Bay does have it. They're at least a good example of how small market teams can get away with it, though I think the injuries are going to prevent Tampa Bay from winning the American League East. They're probably going to fall just shy of the Orioles, who have been pretty remarkably healthy. If you think about it, I think that part of that is they're a young group. They're an athletic group. I think they've taken advantage of the new rules, which, by the way, I know there's a contingent of players that want them to change for the playoffs. Absolutely not in my book. Keep it the way it is. The game's been crisp, fun, exciting, athletic. Why are we going to drag it out? There's already drama built in and baked into a lot of these games. We don't need the 30-second step out, batting glove stuff. I haven't heard a single person say, you know what I miss? Dead time.
Yeah, yeah. And I've covered, I think, the longest World Series game in the history of baseball, and I don't ever want to do that again.
Which game was this?
The Dodgers, Red Sox, where Eovaldi like pitched six or seven innings in the middle of it.
Oh, I do remember that game.
Did not help that I was hungover, but that's a story for another time.
was that the year we did podcasts after every game? Because those games were so long, I considered like napping.
Yeah, no, sometimes. I don't know. Not during that World Series, at least, because I was there. No. I was on site. But what that was a long postseason too. But you know, I do sometimes wonder how much of this is tied into the fact that we work, during these things. If you ask players, if you ask media, they like the new rules, but players and media are all working during these times, you know. So,
yeah,
I do have some sympathy for fans who have told me like it's hard for me to go get a beer because I might miss a whole, you know, I might miss a whole inning. The way it's going right now. And so I don't think that fans are, and I've seen some polling on this, and the polling is mostly positive, but it's more like 60% like the new rules rather than like, if you poll media and players, it's probably like 90%. So
yeah,
a little bit of difference.
I go to hockey games a lot, and like, yeah, I know when I go get something to eat, I may miss half the period because there just aren't that many whistles and mm-hmm. the clock doesn't stop that much. Like, yeah. That's kind of it. Like, if you go to a football game, you might miss, you're not going to miss a whole quarter, but you might miss a whole drive.
Yeah.
It just kind of depends, right? So, I mean, my solution to that is wait for the vendors who come to you. Wait for the beer guy in the stands.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And, or you buy two. You buy two at once, which is what we did. I was there Sunday, the Orioles game. My husband and I and brought our son and they clinched. We didn't make it for the 11 innings. We made it for like three. He's one.
Right.
But,
yeah.
but he's still old enough that you can wear him in the front, right? So you got the two open hands. So it's like, all right, let's go. Because, yeah, you know, you're not going to have a chance to wait back in that line again. Exactly. Yep. Oh, God. But I want to touch on, you know, some of these. We talked about the Orioles and the Reds. And these are teams with like terrific young, talented players. And certainly, I think Corbin Carroll, who I think, was it last night that he became the first rookie to hit,
25,
to go 25-50? Yeah. Was it Tuesday, Wednesday night?
I think so. And he had a real great game in a really big moment because they were playing the Giants and on September 20th. And he goes 4-for-5 with a home run and three runs and an RBI and two stolen bases in a 7-1 win that basically cemented them as one of the wild cards and cemented the Giants as being out. I mean, that's one thing that I wrote recently about Corbin Carroll and just about his leadership and his rising to the moment. You know, I had a really big game against Acuna, a really big game against Betts, and he's the guy that sort of stands up in these big moments and also cares for his teammates outside of the park. So I see like this real nascent young leader. He's not like a real vocal, like rah, rah, rah type leader, but he's a lead by example guy. And so just a real interesting young talent, elite speed, way more power than you would expect given his size, and just outsized leadership skills. So, you know, Corbin Carroll for Rookie of the Year is the biggest lock, I think, of all of the awards, but, he's not alone in that. The one thing that's interesting about
so many locks.
Yeah. Well, also that's interesting about Carroll is, you know, these young players in these big markets with, you know, these big September races, or they're going to go to the playoffs. We're going to hear all about them and we see them, but I did want to give some love to some of the rookies on teams that have fallen out of the race. That, you know, rookies that are good, but, you know, not number one. So the reason this came to mind is Spencer Torkelson the other day for the Tigers. Just hit his, I believe he hit his 30th home run. No, he's still at 29, but he's going to get to 30 this year. He's really turned things around. The former number one pick, used to be, thought of as a bust, I think. And, this year he's really turned things around. So I wanted to give him some love, but, you know, and locally here in Oakland, Zach Geloff is a guy who has power from power alley to power alley. And he's sort of made me think like, oh, this is what the A's do. They find guys, and they're going to be, I think they're actually going to be good in the next couple of years, sometime soon, as impossible as that has seemed over the last couple of years. They've been worse than I've ever seen them, but I'm starting to see players on this team that are going to be good in the future. And Geloff is one of them, but there's a bunch of teams, there's a bunch of players across baseball like this.
It seems like you could point to one young guy on every team, right? Just the youth movement is here. And maybe they're not like LA De La Cruz superstars, but they're a really good, young, exciting player. And I think that's what makes the future so bright. You have a hell of a list here in the rundown.
Yeah.
Craig Carpenter, Bo Naylor, Logan Ohapi. I mean, you know, I think you forget that there's good stuff going on. We tend to think of the Angels as just a mess, right? And we kind of overlook the fact that there are still some good guys.
Yeah, they've
over
got Zach Neto and Logan Ohapi. That's your catcher. That's up the middle. That's your catcher and your shortstop. They're good young players. Nolan Jones. The Rockies are one of the worst teams in baseball, and yet Nolan Jones is really breaking out there. And the last thing I kind of wanted to highlight here is just I think it's interesting that there seems to be kind of a group of young catchers that's stepping forward. So Bo Naylor, we mentioned Logan Ohapi, Luis Camposano, and then Francisco Alvarez on the Mets, is pretty exciting. So that's four young catchers that are basically in their first full years, making it happen. I think you can put Patrick Bailey in that group, at least defensively. He's a real standout. And so there's kind of this new wave of young catchers that's stepping to the forefront. So, I think part of it's the new rules. There was trying to incentivize teams to bring up players like this to maybe win some hardware. If you have the rookie of the year, you get an extra pick. And so I think there has been some incentivization. The game is getting more athletic, so you want to have young players that are in their athletic peak. Sometimes it's just this is what baseball is now, the waves of young talent just that come every year.
Well, what's so interesting, and I had a GM explain this to me in April, was that like it has shifted now because, one, there's the technology to help guys get better up here at the big league level, and two, the game has gotten so fast and explosive and athletic with these new rules that you're calling up guys if you think they can handle it defensively, because defense peaks earlier in a guy's career. So you want to capitalize on the base stealing and the base running and the defense, and if you think he's mature enough to handle the highs and lows offensively and you need him, he's coming up. Right. Versus, getting at bats at every level, kind of methodical moving up through the system that we saw almost exclusively, except for, a Bryce Harper situation here and there. That was more the anomaly, the exception. Now we are seeing kind of a new rule emerge in baseball. Right. And of course, they're cheaper, which doesn't hurt at all when you're a baseball front office. Right. You're like, I only got this guy for how long? They changed the rules on starting guys' clocks. So they have encouraged or tried to encourage, kind of like the Chris Bryant rule, right? They've tried to encourage these guys coming up and teams not delaying people seeing these young guys for an extra year of arbitration. So I think there's a lot of things at hand for this youth movement, and we're just going to continue to see younger and younger players and more talented guys. I do wonder, and this is where the bigger piece, is early specialization contributing to this or no?
Yeah, early specialization is an interesting theory, interesting thing to talk about, because there's guys that you can bring them up to fill a role, right? And you're just like, okay, this guy's going to fit in here. I think of it, on the pitching side, when we start having these I can bring him up and use him for three innings at a time. That's now a new role that we got. This kind of not a starter, not a reliever thing. And you've seen the Dodgers do that with like Emmett Sheehan and some of their guys. They bring them up and they bring them into these like three inning roles. And so we are finding ways to like have a role for a young person that's just ready to we can just plug a guy in. That's fine. But I do think there's something else going on, because if you look at the guys who were just drafted, they are all being pushed super aggressively. So some part of it, the one thing you didn't mention is that the minor leagues got smaller, right? Recently.
True.
And
true,
so
yeah.
There's fewer seats for people to occupy, right? And so you have fewer minor league teams. So there's fewer stops. And so we almost, there was like a low A that there's like a stop that's almost eliminated. So you just kind of, you have to push people faster. So if you look at people that were drafted in the first round this year, Wyatt Langford, I think he just got to Triple A. I don't know. I know he at least made it to Double A. Dylan Cruz, you know, he's in Double A. Ethan Salas, the 17-year-old catcher that AJ Preller assigned, is already in Double A. So we're seeing teams be more aggressive. And I heard a farm director a while back, and this was like 2-3 years ago, saying if my pitchers in the minor leagues have major league stuff grades, so if their stuff is ready, why are they down there? They're not learning anything more down there. And that's another thing, is I think our ability to measure process as separate from results is getting better and better. And so we can say, well, this guy makes good swing decisions. He hits the ball really hard. Why is he down there facing inferior talent? The next step for him is the major leagues. And if I got a pitcher and he's got three pitches and they all grade out as major league pitches by movement and velocity and everything, what's he doing down there? I got to get him to the major leagues. The Mariners look like a team that's really bought into this, where they developed all these players. They have a stuff plus number that's very similar to mine, and they developed all these pitchers that are part of one of maybe the best staff in baseball right now. I mean, like, don't you take the Mariners up there with them? And they're all internally developed. Brian Wu, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, like they're half their bullpen. And they're a team that's like, I think they probably looked at their players and just said, these guys look ready by stuff. Let's get them in the big leagues. And it's worked for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing, you know, they used to say, well, you have to refine command and you have to do this. And the guys get hit at an alarming rate up here. Command seems to be second to stuff. And until that changes in how we evaluate guys, I think you're going to continue to see guys on that fast track, right? Like, guys come up and lots of times they don't know where the strike zone is, but teams are just reliant on their stuff and how electrifying it is and think that, you know, it will come later. They will harness that later versus being a finished product when they come up here. And it's so interesting. You mentioned Seattle. I was talking to someone in their organization earlier this year, on the player development side. And he said, you know, Julio Rodriguez can get better here because we have the tools to make him better, mm-hmm. right? That didn't exist 10 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe not even in some organizations 5 years ago. But now we can call up these Julio Rodriguez, Ellie De La Cruz's, Gunnar Henderson's. I'm like, we know these teams feel confident that they have the ability, the tools, and also the coaches. If you talk to coaches, staffs are bigger. People are much more into instruction than they've ever been because these guys have less experience than they've ever had. So that, I think, plays into it as well. How you feel about the coaching level at your big league level mm-hmm. to get these guys better.
I mean, your best
coaches.
Right?
The Orioles are good this year.
Your best coaches are going to be in the major leagues. It's just how it is. Yeah. Your best coaches. And then right. On the command side, the thing that's interesting is you're the best umpires are in the major leagues, right? And so you could have a guy in the minor leagues that thinks he can command a pitch well enough to use it because the people he's facing make bad swing decisions and because the umpires are bad, right? And then he gets the big leagues and goes, oh, wow, like, you know, now I know that I can't actually command the slider. An example of this is Logan Gilbert came up with a sweeper because he was taught a sweeper in the minor leagues with the Mariners. And he got to the major leagues and he realized, I can't throw this slider for strikes as much as I used to in the minors. People aren't swinging at it as much as they did in the minors. And so he went from that sweeper to a harder, smaller slider that he throws now called a gyro slider. He's throwing that now because he can command it and he's having much more success. So that's something that's an adjustment that could have only maybe happened at the major leagues, right? Because the players and the umpires are telling you how good your pitches are, right? And if the players and the umpires you're facing aren't major league quality, then you might not know that you can't throw the sweeper until you get to the major leagues. You try to throw it against them, you're like, oh, this isn't working, you know? So that's part of it too, is the last adjustment period has to be at the major league. So, you know, if it looks like everything's ready, you might as well throw them in there because you need to know more about them anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just so interesting, this youth movement. I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg with what we're going to be able to do. I actually have a story shelved, but it's going to come back at some point in time about this very thing because it's such a huge topic and it's so interesting. I remember one conversation with Brandon Hyde earlier this summer where he said, you got to have a lot of patience, right? You got to remember when you have this young of a team, even when they're good, even when they're athletic, they're going to do stupid shit, right? They're going to do dumb stuff on the base paths, or they're going to make an error. They're going to show their lack of experience. And you have to have coaches who coach, and you also have to have a lot of patience with these guys, because they're not coming up with the 5-6 years of minor league experience. They don't have that. I spent the whole year at AA this year. Next year, I'll spend the whole year at AAA, right? So because that has changed, you can't replicate all of that as much. They don't have nearly as many games played, so you still have to be patient at this level. We mentioned Corbin Carroll being a lock for Rookie of the Year, Gunnar Henderson a lock for AL Rookie of the Year. Do we think either of these guys have peaked? Like, absolutely not. They're going to keep getting better and better and better at this big league level. And it's so interesting when you look at these organizations to see, like, okay, this guy is good now, he can help us now, but we think we can do X and Y and Z, and he's going to be even better. So let's call him up now when we think he's at 80% of his potential. Mm-hmm. Get that 80%, because it's better than anything else we have, and then keep going up and up and up, rather than waiting for him to be 90 or 95% completed.
Right, yeah. Yeah. And it has also to do with just how well you think you can suss out, you know, the aging on the other side, and you know, the veteran players. There is a sad part to it, which is you do have fewer jobs now for the kind of 1 or 2 year deals for a veteran hitter at the end of his career, because you're going to bring up the young guy. And there are finances involved in it, but I don't think it's all finances, because if you do look at the teams that have outperformed their projections, a lot of times they're young teams where it's a bunch of young players that have played together. And that's true of the Diamondbacks, and that's true of the Orioles. And, you know, part of that is that they care for each other. That's something Corbin Carroll said: we care for each other outside the field, and that just makes the work environment better. And so there is a non-financial reason to kind of bring your kids up together. And that gives you a kind of a core of players that root for each other outside the field and are of similar age and have similar concerns outside the field, and you know, can go out to dinner together because they don't necessarily have to go watch their kids afterwards, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a thing that happens. If the veterans have, you know, families and stuff to deal with, the kids want to go out after, you know, like, there's the best teams have a kind of a mix of both, but that's something that you can think about when in terms of building a roster.
Yeah. One more thing, Eno, and then I will let you go. We've got, like I said, 10 days left. Some teams have single digits games left. One thing you're looking for between now and the playoffs?
I'm looking for the Cubs pitching staff. I'm really watching the Cubs pitching staff. You had Spencer Steele was a Cy Young contender, but it's the last couple starts have maybe pulled him out of that. And I think the lineup in Chicago is good, but with Albert Alzolay hurt and a couple other things going on, Marcus Stroman, you know, question marks, like, I'm looking for the Cubs pitching staff to step forward and pitch their way into the postseason.
I like that. I'm looking for the Texas Rangers and seeing if the rabbit, as you called them earlier in the show, is going to be able to come through. Rangers fans have suffered through this long rebuild. They had so much optimism, so much momentum early. As you said, they are slowly getting healthy here. Are they going to do enough to get in? Because they're a dangerous team if they get in. That bullpen is suspect, yes. But there are ways around a suspect bullpen if you can be a little creative in the playoffs. So those are two things we're looking for. Feel free to tweet us. Let us know what you're looking for from now until the end of the season. He's at Eno Saris. I'm at Britt_Giroli. If you would like to get access, if you're not already an Athletic subscriber, what are you waiting for? This past week alone, a huge, huge story into the Padres collapse by Dennis Lynn and Ken Rosenthal. A great one today as we tape on Thursday about the Mets collapse by Will Salmon and Tim Britton. Such a good, thorough job by all of those reporters on getting into, as we mentioned, two of the biggest disappointments in baseball. You can get my articles, Eno's articles, so much more good stuff, so many sports. Make sure you get yourself a subscription at theathletic.com. Always sales going on. I think right now it is $2 a month for the first year. Hop on that. We will see you back here next Thursday to recap the last couple days. Talk about the last couple days of the regular season. Time is absolutely flying. Thanks for hanging with us here on the 3-0 show.
Always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0.